All right, welcome back, everyone, to the United We Strike Marathon. This is the last one of the year. This momentous year of 2012 has almost completely gone, although we do have the 21st to look forward to, and also the 12th, where there's another meditation. But right now, we're going to jump to New Zealand and introduce you folks to someone who actually doesn't need much introduction at all. And that's our very good friend and supporter here, Vinny Eastwood of the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. Vinny, welcome.
Thanks, Karen, for that miraculous introduction. Are you sure I don't need any introductions? Because I don't think I'm like that famous as to say that everybody knows who he is and what he does. How dull.
How's that infamous?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I'm trying to adopt an air of arrogance and self-importance just in order to do the job kind of thing, whilst at the same time retaining my humanity, which I think a lot of people struggle with when you're in the radio sphere and you're talking about the most horrible things that happen to humanity. Sometimes you kind of lose your perspective on things and you stop being polite to people. The pleases and the thank yous drop away because you think it's all implied, like everybody should know who I am and what I do and be thanking and saying please to me instead. You know, and I caught myself doing that. And one of my listeners brought it up on an email because I just called for donations and stuff like that. And it was kind of saying that I was being very arrogant and no pleases, no thank yous. Not even so much as a Merry Christmas, just essentially guilt-tripping people into giving me money so I can keep doing what I'm doing. And you know what? He was right. And I realized that I had to sleep on it. I sent him a quick email the night before just saying, okay, this has flown me into a rage in a kind of how dare you fashion. So I'll tell you what, I'm not going to reply to the points that you've raised right now. I'm going to reply to them in the morning. When I've calmed down a bit. And sure enough, this morning I replied to that email and I addressed all these points, which I think are actually, we get a whole lot of pride in what we do. And when anybody questions it or accuses us or anything or throws labels at us or anything, we instantly have that kind of reptilian brain response, the lash out and rah, rather than the if you'd taken 10 seconds to kind of calm yourself and but take a few deep breaths and what have you, you would have said something totally completely different. And often we catch ourselves doing that sort of thing, just flying off the handle because somebody doesn't know what the heck they're talking about or somebody is just irritating or coming up for a denominational reason of little or to no consequence. You know, like I was leading the protest yesterday and this dude comes up to me and tells me I'm wrong. You know, like the whole protest is there opposing this Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement. Couldn't do my show yesterday because I had to come out here and as it turned out, I became sort of the leader of the protest. You know, I welcomed everybody to the protest, got them started to cheering, got them started to chanting, had the 100-watt megaphone, which is bigger than the lead vehicle had. And had a volunteer, my mate Michael, who was driving the car at the rear of the protest for me while I was walking around with a wireless microphone and a shoulder-mounted GoPro camera, and just uploaded the videos this morning. And I was watching him last night when you cruising around at a protest with a GoPro camera on a shoulder mount that's out in front of you looking back at you like you're on Fear Factor or something like that. And it looked like one of those extreme snowboarding type videos that you'd see in a Red Bull commercial or something like that. Like the footage was that awesome. And I was just looking at this thinking, you know what? I might be the coolest protester alive. No, seriously though, without stretching the case, the way that I do things is really cool and really funny and I really enjoy it. The problem is I see myself doing that because I record it And then it's like I'm watching somebody else, but I know that it's me, and it kind of promotes this sort of narcissistic tendency, and I'm starting to experience this for the second or third time or whatever when you kind of feel that you're getting too big for your boots and you're getting too full of yourself, getting too far ahead of yourself, and it's like whoa. Rein it back in. What are you doing? What's your real objective here? Is it to become one of the scumbag pieces of trash who sell themselves for anything and get offended when anybody questions them? Or are you trying to simply give coverage to all the people that really deserve it, who've done all the knowledge and the activism and put them up on the internet so that there is at least a new media source where people can go to get their information from now on rather than the mainstream media, as well as partnering with all these other different people, you know? And I think, that is the objective. The objective isn't me. The objective is actually everybody else. And I've sort of forgotten that. And I'm glad that I remembered before it was too late, before I turned into some form of douchebag. And this is a lesson everybody who has a microphone or a camera or anything has to learn. That person that you're listening to back in the recordings isn't really you. It's a manufactured form. You've got to understand yourself, that you are not that person on the video, really. You are not that person behind the microphone, really. Who you are is what you do in the rest of your life, just as much as what you do on air in front of everybody else to see. Because I think people are uncomfortable with just being themselves and understanding how frail they are, how easily swayed by the riches and power and that sort of thing. If you wanted prudent stewardship of the planet, the most important thing is prudent stewardship of yourself. Usually in the service to others, that helps a bit, but it's no guarantee. There are plenty of charitable organizations out there who are run by complete trash, who take everybody's money and give only a handful of it to the people who they used their names to raise that money for. You know, how many cancer research drivers have you ever seen? You know, donate. We're researching into finding a cure for cancer. They ever found a cure for cancer? No. Where did all that money go? Oh, it goes into the massive pharmaceutical companies. Really? You mean the massive pharmaceutical companies that put monofluorescent acid, which is a real virulent, dangerous poison, and use it as a binding agent in the vast majority of their medications, so hence any medication that you're taking from a mainstream pharmaceutical company will probably cause you cancer? Is that who you're giving this cancer research money to? Yeah. I think I'll pass. Because these people don't see the connections. And my fun thing that I did yesterday was, other than keeping the crowd motivated, is also making them laugh. You know, ever occur to you that no matter what you say out of a megaphone, it's instantly funnier? You know, you could say John Key is a scumbag, or you could what are those other protest quotes? I'm sorry, I'm very tired. I was pretty exhausted walking around and yelling, and you see my voice is a little bit hoarse. Like a professional radio show host should be, yes. And what was it? When your rights are under attack, stand up, fight back. When the Prime Minister's a problem gambler, stand up, fight back. When they're signing peaceful agreements and they don't even tell you any skerrick of truth, stand up, fight back. You know, just kind of spitballing and firing it out there, you know, getting a few people cackling. In the middle of a protest, when people are being roughed up by police, there's a huge crowd of people surging into this centre here and banging on the glass windows, cops come in, spear formation. They penetrate right through the crowd that are close up against the building, banging on the windows and such, trying to force their way through the doors. And they start shoving and pushing all the protesters back. The protesters smash up all these potted plants and things like that we're decorating around the place, and they're all full of these polystyrene cubes, which just kind of get blasted out and fly everywhere, and they're like halfway down the street. People putting balaclavas or little handkerchiefs around their faces and stuff like that to prevent themselves from going identified, stealing police officers' hats and then running out of the crowd and stuff like that and laughing at them. One of them was bald, and I thought that was actually really funny. It turned out that these cops were just like any other cops, no idea what the heck they're doing. And just like any other time when I've seen these big protesters, things get nasty, there's always one cop, usually a senior cop, who is a bigger knob than the rest of them combined, okay? It jettisoned onto the other side of the police line after I'd used my megaphone to encourage the protesters to move quietly, calmly, and to not panic and to stick together and to not lay back, otherwise they might be arrested. You know, I was doing the police officer's job for them. They didn't have any public address system. I did. So I did what I could to prevent any of the protesters from getting arrested. And maybe because I did that, and I'd spoken to a number of senior police officers on the day, they all just seemed to approach me because they think I'm the leader of the protest. But I'm just there with my own agenda, essentially, because I'm half protester, half reporter, half public figure. Does that fractionally even work out? Well, anyway, I'm on the protester's side. I'm on the cop side, and I'm also on the side of getting great footage and getting the truth out to people. So I'm a multiverse free agent, essentially, at a protest. You don't know whose side I'm going to be on. It'll just be at any given moment. If I can help the protesters in some way, I do. If I can help the police in some way, I do. It doesn't mean that I'm going to, you know, tell the police things that they need to know about other protesters and what have you, and give them info packets on them, whatever. No. But the whole function here is that if you're capturing all of this police violence, and we'll talk about that senior cop, he shoved this old lady. She was walking around. The protest was basically over. Okay, and there's a big line of cops in front of me, and there's an old lady who's a protester walking towards the big line of cops from behind, just trying to get through to the other side where I was, and she's coming through. She's very calmly. She's walking. She's doing as she was directed, and then this cop comes up right behind her just as she goes through the line and shoves her as hard as he can, and she nearly falls over if she hadn't plowed right into me. And because I'm big, strong, and kind of got a big belly and what have you, you know, she was cushioned in the blow, and it wasn't all that bad. That same cop, as I, they wouldn't let us go back to my car, basically. They had a big line of cops blocking off the whole street. My car was parked in the street with a fracking megaphone on it, with the boot open, with all my expensive camera equipment and all of that kind of stuff. We weren't allowed to go to the private establishment even next door to get a beer. So, you know, the police were impeding the local businesses from their customers getting through at the same time. I had to walk all the way around the block in order to get back to my car. And as I got back to my car, I took a little bit of footage of the burn mark in the middle of the road where protesters had burnt, I don't know, umpteen different white boxes that represented, you know, pages of documents and what have you that are in this Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement deal, which is basically the precursor to some kind of corporate dictatorship, and give all the power to the companies that are trading here rather than the people who are living here. And this cop comes up to me from, he crosses the street, you know, from the other road. I've got my camera pouch on my hip, and the microphone's inside it, you know, with just the handle of the microphone sticking out of this pouch. And so he comes up to me, like, real kind of threatening, like, and he goes, "What's in the pouch?" And I go, "It's my microphone." And he's like, "Yeah, show it to me, you know, just comes right at me and is grabbing it out and ripping what the hell did he think I had in my freaking camera pouch, yo? Are you kidding me? What a freaking... Ugh. You know, no matter how much you try to like cops, no matter how much you try to give them some space, no matter how much you even try to follow their fracking direction, they still act like scum. That's the immutable truth. And bear in mind, this was the highest ranking officer there. So you can just imagine what orders all of these young cops, who some of which I spoke to and were rather kind and nice and actually prepared to fracking listen and didn't want to touch me and shove me without giving me so much as a word of warning or a word of direction. They initiate force every time. And that is what violence is. Not attacking somebody who's attacked you, that's not violence. It's the initiation of force that is violence. And that's what all of these cops were doing that whole day. They were just the initiators. Shoving, smacking people in the faces, trying to arrest people who hadn't even done anything wrong. You know? Just violent, disgusting pigs, essentially. But it doesn't mean that because I see the reality of the police that I hate all police. I hate all police all the same. Not because they might be bad people or whatever. It's because when they put on that uniform and when they are ordered to do things, seemingly almost all of them become robotic killing machines if they were told to be so. That's what I hate about the police as an institution. Not the police as people. Although I do hate many, many, many individuals in the police who I've met and come into contact over the years at protests, who are a bunch of disrespectful, unkind, unwavering, absolutely disgusting, sociopathic, criminal scum. That's what a lot of these senior cops are. Really. And that's the reason why they become senior cops, because there's even worse criminal scum above them who wish to have more criminal scum underneath them so they can implement their criminal scumbaggery agenda over all the people at all times. Global intimidation force if necessary. And I'm sure one's on the way. Is anybody else out there think that police should, I don't know, behave a little bit differently? I mean, you do want your police to be intimidating just in case, you know, you have real bad criminals and what have you. I remember speaking to these two cops before the protest even started, and they said the protest didn't have a permit to go on the road. And the protest went on the road anyway. And these people had told me, there's not enough cops to police a protest like this. We haven't been given any notice. We haven't given any permits, you know. It'll draw police away from policing domestic violence cases and drug dealing and violence and murders and all of that kind of stuff. That's what he said before. And as soon as the protesters were about to try and interrupt an international trade conference with 100 delegates from many different countries speaking about the worst violation of all law in New Zealand's history, we had nearly 200 cops show up. Felt like 200 cops to me anyway. Might have been just 100. Might have been just 50. But that's after two cops telling me that they couldn't even afford the two of them to be there. You know? Were you lying to me, cop? Oh, that's right. You fracking were. Saw that same cop who told me that towards the end of the protest. And he just says, be quiet. You know, these people are just douchebags. And the protesters are almost as bad. As in people come up and tell me I was wrong for criticizing this. You know, it was an overwhelmingly positive experience overall. But it was interesting is that when you're speaking the truth or covering the truth or doing whatever, the cops shove you around and protesters accost you and tell you that you're wrong about stuff and don't have any reason why they think you're wrong. They just have their own made up, manufactured, communist and or libertarian and or whatever fracking spectrum bias. And they come up and they pick holes in like one tiny little thing that you've said out of a megaphone or whatever, as opposed to, hey, have you heard about this? Did you know about this? Could you say this on the megaphone perhaps or anything? No, they come up and you're wrong because you're stupid and I don't want to listen to you. Could you turn that megaphone down because it's hurting my ears? You know, this kind of BS. Come on. You're at a protest, and you're expected to what? Everything to be nice and quiet? How fluoridated are you? And that's what I also don't get. Why the attempted smashing into of the TPPA conference? Why the endless, moronic, repetitive chanting that doesn't mean anything? That where no information is really given out during the protests. There was a few speakers, but they were poorly equipped with only a very small megaphone and nobody could hear them. So I had to make sure that I had the wireless microphone hooked up to my 100-watt megaphone on the car in the street and just held it up to their face at the same time so that people could actually hear what they were saying. And I made sure to record it as well so that it's now uploaded. People can view it on my YouTube channel, Mr. News Guerrilla Media, and you can see what these speakers were actually speaking about that day. Not just the chanting, not just the violence, not just the burning and all of that kind of stuff, which is more or less irrelevant. You know, the real speaking, the real knowledge, the real information, that's what's important about a protest, and that's what I try to do for the people of New Zealand, at least anyway. And that's kind of why I'm famous. All right. Well, I think we've almost come to the end of the show here, have we?
Well, yes. We just have 3 minutes to go, and yeah, just go ahead.
Yeah, well, you know, enjoy you and all year long and everything. The work that you do over there in your part of the world is exemplary, and it's been a great pleasure having you support this movement now for a couple of years. So thank you very much, and Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Yes. Well, thank you very much for having me on. And I'm very pleased to be here. And I believe during one of the next marathons, I'll be trying to organize. Karen, you've actually offered me the opportunity essentially to do something I've wanted to do for a long time, which was to give New Zealand activists who are really good talkers their own little radio shows.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. That because this is what I've been doing. You go out and you film those people, and suddenly you realize, hey, you don't need reporters anymore. These people are the reporters who already have done all that investigative research, and for the most part, they know how to say it as well with truth and conviction. What great radio hosts! What great news commentators! Wouldn't you say?
I would, and Vinny, we've got the stream. It is commercial free. We pay for it. We've got the Skype and the ability to make phone calls all over the world. All we need are dedicated people, global people, who want to come together and raise a voice. We've got the potential here to do what the social networks do as well, but to have like live broadcasts when you're there at a protest where the police are abusing people. How cool to be able to say, here, we're going to go to broadcast right now on United We Strike. You know, start getting it out there. We're no sponsors, nothing but we the people. So hopefully in the next year here in 2013, we'll really be doing a lot more evolving into expanding and including more and more people all around the world.
Mm. And so will I. And I really do hope that people view the vast amount of content that is on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com archives, as well as the YouTube channel, Mr. News, Guerrilla Media. There's well over 1,000 videos there. Just hit 1 million hits the other week, and have more subscribers than the New Zealand Herald, which is the New York Times of New Zealand. So I'm busting the mainstream media up at their own game. But the only reason I'm even capable of doing any of this, every single thing that I'm wearing right now, from my underwear to my shirt and my pants and my headphones and the computer in front of me and the microphone and the cameras that are on my desk and the megaphones that are around me and everything and the banners and the chemtrail things on the walls and everything, every single thing has been donated by people, and I make sure that those donations get used for their intended purpose, to make scumbaggery get exposed as often as humanly fracking possible. So I appreciate everybody's donations. You can go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Please donate. We're having a bit of a financial crisis at the moment. It's Christmas season. It's really sad to ask people for money on fracking Christmas, don't you think? Because everybody's got it so tight with all their families and all that sort of stuff. But if you do have like 10, 20 bucks or 500 bucks floating around or whatever that you need to give it to a good cause this Christmas, go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com and click on the little donate button, please. I implore you, and I can guarantee that there will be people that you've never heard of before coming on the show to teach you things that are new, and I will be fun and exciting, and I will make sure that this world becomes a better place by being a better man and a better radio show host and a better filmmaker and a better activist and protester and a better designer and a better wordsmith and better everything. And I just need to be able to survive in order to do it is all. All I ask is to be alive, and then I will do everything I can to make that life improved for myself and anybody else that I come into contact with.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Vinny. And we are going into break. Thanks for being on our show, and hopefully everything works out fine. So next hour is going to be also very interesting. Thanks a lot, Vinny. See you soon. Okay.
You're listening to the International Community Radio Network.
All right, we are still here with you on the United We Strike Marathon. This is the last one of the year, 2012, and our guests for this segment are Michael Rivero of WhatReallyHappened.com. Michael, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And we also have my buddy Charlie McGrath from WideAwakeNews.com. Welcome, Charlie.
Hello, thank you.
And I think you might have Vinny Eastwood lurking in the background, and later on it looks like maybe Ravana will pop in. But right now, I'm going to just say thank you to both of you for your support with the United We Strike Marathons. As we wind up the year here, we're still plugging away, hoping that people understand that when they follow the money, all sorts of things start to make sense. And on that, Charlie, I'm going to toss the ball to you. You can toss it to Mike, and you guys take it away.
Well, thanks, Karen. It's like I said, it's always happy to – I'm glad I could be here with you guys on this one. And I think it's certainly more important now. Probably the trajectory we are on, it's very obvious, shows that it's more important now that we get together on these and look for a solution to get out of this system because it's coming apart, and we're going to be offered a solution, and that solution isn't going to be freedom. It's going to be something totally different. Mike?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I mean, the reality is the particular model of banking that the world has been using for the last few hundred years is one that by design creates more debt than money to pay that debt. It's essentially a pyramid scheme, and that is the reason why a very few individuals who own these private central banks are incredibly wealthy and everybody else is struggling to deal with debt. And it's intentional. The system is designed to keep us slaved to debt and to keep us under control. It's rule by compound interest, and it really is no more legitimate than rule by divine right or rule by slavery. And we need to outgrow that and evolve to something that's a little bit more realistic for the 21st century.
Amen. It's like a Ponzi scheme economy. Didn't the very first Ponzi scheme, like the guy he was named after, was like back in the early 1900s or something like that, and he scammed like $14 million or something. And then you have a look at like a Bernie Madoff who scammed $2.4
billion.
It's like it's Ponzi Mark II.
Yeah, the crimes become – I mean the crimes of today, no, I mean there's no comparison to what used to outrage – you know, free market capitalism, what used to outrage a free society, you know, and it isn't just in the financial realm, it's in the political realm, it's in the geopolitical realm, it's what we're doing, you know, militarily. Everything that's happening now, Mike and Vinny, even just a few years ago, right? Even when, you know, when I was in high school, I graduated high school in 1987, you know, the notion in 1987 that the too big to fail institutions were going to end up controlling and dominating our government. And we were going to see these kind of last half a decade worth of bailouts and never-ending stealing of the financial future of the people of this world. It would have been unbelievable to most Americans. They would have not. You know, look at the controversy when Lee Iacocca borrowed $1 billion to keep a Chrysler afloat. That is nothing now. That's everyday occurrences. If it wasn't for this command economy, command from on high. You know, many of these institutions, most of them wouldn't even be in existence right now. And, you know, truly that's where they should be, especially in the case of the financial sector. These institutions should be public utilities at this point, not for-profit private corporations because they didn't earn their bones on for-profit profit. They earned it on putting their failure on the backs of the people of the world. So, yeah, looking at 2012 December, what do we got? The 8th of December, 2012. It's amazing to me that, the things that go on that they don't even make headlines anymore. This is, you know, we talk about Bernie Madoff. We talk about Ponzi scheme. We talk about other financial crimes of the past. None of these things in the past even compare remotely to where we're at now on every front.
Well, the reality is that the problems with this kind of banking system have been known for a very, very long time. It's just that when the Federal Reserve came into being in 1913, they immediately lobbied the public school system to simply not teach children about how we got here and why this was a problem. I mean, if you go back and you look at the writings of Thomas Jefferson and Ben Franklin, the primary reason for the American Revolution was the Bank of England and King George III's Currency Act, which ordered the colonies to conduct all commerce with banknotes borrowed at interest from the Bank of England. And it took only a few years of this. Took only a few years of this to plunge the colonies into the same kind of mass poverty and unemployment and suffering that the people of England were undergoing at the time. So we fought a revolution, and we created a country in which the Treasury issued a value-based currency into circulation to fuel commerce. The government basically spent it into circulation to buy what the government wanted. It would circulate around fueling commerce without accruing interest and then be taxed back at the end of the cycle to balance the books. And that kind of an economy is very powerful. It works for the people. And the private central bankers will do anything they can to destroy it. They were trying to destroy the early American economic system. part of the reason for the support for the War of 1812 on Britain's side was to try and force the Bank of England back into the colonies. When that didn't work, the bankers basically came in here and they bribed their way to the first and second banks of the United States. And both of those banks almost destroyed the country. And in 1913, they did it again, and instead of calling it the Third Bank of the United States, they called it the Federal Reserve to fool people into thinking it was part of the federal government. But it isn't. It is a privately owned bank. It's no more federal than Federal Express. And we're in this huge mess because the people who set up these private central banks, they want their money, they get very rich off of this, and they don't care how it's going to destroy the nation and its people because they're going to be long dead and gone. They don't care about the aftermath. And it is a pyramid scheme. And when the pyramid starts to collapse, the Keynesian economists say the government has to start borrowing to keep that little pyramid going. And when the people and the government can't borrow anymore, that is when they start the wars to force everybody to go even deeper into debt. And that's where we are right now. That's why we're hovering here at the beginning of World War III, to just keep that Ponzi banking system going a little bit longer.
And speaking of the previous show here about the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement that's now coming in, and it'll do for the entire ASEAN, South Pacific, Asian Union, whatever, that has been done to the European Union, which is essentially just seize control of it and direct all justice to a privately owned world court, which they control, and end of national sovereignty. You know, it's like bye-bye. And only a few hundred people turned out to this protest, and it affects everything from it's almost like Agenda 21 plus Codex Alimentarius combined into one, being passed secretly with people having to sign on to the agreements without knowing what's in them. Right. And the stuff that we do know what's in them is so horrific and draconian that it will literally cost many lives if this legislation is passed. And it gets demonized in the media as all the protesters were violent and the poor police officer that got his head stomped on by a protester.
Go
ahead, Charlie.
Well, I just wanted to follow up on both your guys' point. Because, Mike, you're right. I mean, Andrew Jackson, the greatest thing he ever did in his own memoirs is get rid of this national bank, you know, and he had very powerful forces against him. He's also the only president to take us out of debt. And since then, we've been down this path of a banker-dominated political system, eventually, like you say, ending up in 1913 with the creature from Jekyll Island. but to what Vinny was saying, we have a real obvious model right before us right now. It is financial terrorists, bankers, that are positioning the world through sovereign debt, right? Through the sovereign debt torture device that they've come up with, to take the sovereignty of the people of this world and do it in a disguised manner that it is for their own good. So what we see going on in Europe right now, where you see like Greece lose its sovereignty, you see the push for representative government inside of Europe be the push for it to be dismantled on important issues like financial matters, and it be upwardly integrated into the hands of a few people in Brussels. The exact same thing's happening here. You know, since 2007-2008, all the power has been handed over to the Federal Reserve and to the lackeys that truly support the Federal Reserve. And, you know, at the end of it, this governed by crisis is how we get to this. We have to have an emergency. We have to have a crisis. We have this crisis. We get legislation. We lose more freedom. We lose more sovereignty in the United States and in Europe. And the end goal is simple. They've talked about it. Global financial governance. And everything else can be put under that. Because, you know, Agenda 21, anything else that has to do with dealing with society can be put right underneath that. Because if you control the finances of the world, if you control the mechanisms in which people exchange goods and services and how they pay for those goods and services, you control it all, period. Everything else will fall into place. And so if we have a bunch of elite bankers in Brussels or the IMF that are owning the sovereignty of the people of the world, they run this planet.
Well, if you remember what Rothschild said, he said, "Let me control the issuance of a nation's money, and I care not who makes the laws." Yep. And it was simply a reminder that control of the money is control of the nation. And again, because all of these systems are Ponzi schemes, the only way to keep them going is we're getting this continuing message from all of our rulers: you must make do with less so that we can have more. And all across Europe, we're seeing the European people just shoved down into poverty and starvation. And the reason they want to bring it to a global state, that's been the agenda all along, because these private central banks are terrified of any nation or government that dares suggest going back to state-issued value-based currency. And they will not only assassinate leaders who talk about that. Jackson had an attempt on his life. Abraham Lincoln was assassinated after he introduced the greenbacks. John F. Kennedy was assassinated after Executive Order 11110. Over in Libya, Gaddafi was everybody's buddy, and all of a sudden he starts talking about a state bank and the gold dinar. And so he's attacked and killed. Saddam Hussein wanted to sell his oil for euros and break away from the dollar and the Federal Reserve. He gets attacked and lynched. And that's really what it comes down to. The common enemy of all humanity are these private central banks issuing the public currency as a loan at interest. And their plan is to eventually bring the entire world under that system of perpetual debt slavery. And in a generation, because the schools will no longer teach that there's a different way to run national economy, the people of the world will be unaware there's a different way to live. Just like after 1913, American students never heard about the Currency Act or state-issued currency being the reason for the creation of the United States of America in the beginning. And it is a global fascist dictatorship. And we know that the money power has ruled overtly and covertly throughout history, but we are at a point right now where they're basically trying to go for the whole thing. And that means, you know, we're looking at war with Russia, war with China. And the reason all of these Muslim countries are being attacked is because they religiously ban usury as Christianity used to. Basically that's it. This clash of civilizations everybody's talking about, it is a war between banking systems, and they're basically using the blood of our young children to balance their balance sheets.
That's right.
This real problem is that people don't notice that the banking system and the issuance of currency with debt attached to it is usury, you know. And once you understand that fact, it doesn't matter what trade deals being signed. It doesn't matter what presidents being elected. It doesn't matter who the new chief of the FDA or the CIA or the NSA or any other number of alphabet agencies in the United States or abroad. Because you understand that all of those things exist solely for the purposes and the provision of the will of the bankers.
Now, let me give you
that. And until that root is struck out, these branches and these brambles on people's freedoms will grow and encircle everything until you won't be able to move at all.
Yeah,
is now. Start hacking away.
No doubt. And to Mike's point, we talk about leaders being decapitated because they don't want to participate in the global financial system that is dominated by these families, this bankster cartel. And, you know, Iran is the same thing. You know, they want to trade their oil in something other than U.S. dollars. So that, I mean, which is exactly why they're soon going to be a target for the West.
They're trading for oil, they're trading their oil for gold right now. And that is definitely a major threat. I want to point out something historically that a lot of people really miss. Excuse me. When the United States, first of all, banks can serve a useful purpose.
Sure.
In terms of marshaling and organizing monetary power within a community. But banks are not there to serve the people. They are businesses. They are there to make a profit. When the United States was created and the money was issued by the government and went back to the government, banks were off to one side. You had freedom of choice. You could deposit your money in a bank if you wanted to, but you didn't have to. You could go to a bank and borrow money at interest, but you didn't have to. And because of that, as the economy started to get more and more difficult, people would stop borrowing money and the system would be naturally stable. But with the advent of the Federal Reserve and the Federal Reserve note, you are now, you've lost your freedom to not have your life tangled up with the bank. Every time you handle a Federal Reserve note, you are handling the proceeds of a loan that is accruing interest while it's in your hand. That interest is then paid back down the road either in higher prices or in higher taxes. And we're all forced to borrow from the Federal Reserve just to have any currency in our pocket at all. We've lost our freedom to choose for ourselves whether or not to involve ourselves with the bank. The bank has a piece of the action of everything that we're doing. Now they're pushing for a cashless society so that every time you swipe that card for a newspaper or a candy bar, the bank gets a fraction of a penny multiplied by 300 million Americans, multiplied by 100 swipes a day, and you begin to understand it is just this incredible predatory system. And it really does have to go. And unfortunately, yes. when we get back to the context of this clash of civilizations between a war between banking systems, unfortunately, the wrong side is winning at the moment.
Yeah, and the thing that we need to understand is that, you know, for the folks listening, I'm sure most of them do, but this all sounds like a plan that you know, you don't have to be a genius to figure out that it's true. But what we're not saying, which we need to focus on, is these guys are going to stop at nothing to achieve this. They're pulling out all the stops, and it's self-evident that they do not care. They don't care how many millions, billions of people die. They will get their way. They will get their way, or they will wreak, they will unleash hell onto the surface of this planet.
I think you misunderstand the flow of this. It isn't that they get what they want or they will unleash hell. Unleashing hell is part of the process. It's part of the process. It's part of the plan. It's intended from the beginning. Okay, you have a private central bank goes into existence in a country. People start borrowing. They start building up debt, and they start paying a lot of interest until they reach the point where they can't borrow anymore. Then the Keynesians say this is where the government has to borrow on behalf of the people without their permission, and the government starts borrowing and borrowing and borrowing. That's what we saw here in the United States with the government borrowing all the money for the bailouts and for all this other stuff. Then when you reach the point where the people and the government simply won't borrow anymore, that is when the banksters will start a war, because war forces everybody to borrow more to fight the war. And then after it's all over, they have to borrow even more to rebuild. And when that whole deadly cycle is all over, everybody has what they started out with, except the graveyards are a lot bigger, and everybody is on the hook to the banks for the next 50 to 100 years. Germany only paid off their World War I bank loans 3 years ago. So, of course, it's time for World War III.
Yeah, but my point was the nations that were not under that umbrella, what you're saying is 100% true. It's already happened. The nations that we talk about every day on the radio program, and you talk on your radio program, when we talk about Europe, when we talk about the United States, Canada, Mexico, the so-called Western world, and a lot of the East, is already the hooks of this banking cabal is in, and they've got it. They've got it, man. They control it completely, totally. They have engineered enough crisis inside of so-called free nations to achieve this. What I'm talking about is these nations like Libya, Syria, Iran, Russia, China. These guys are not going to stop. They own all of this. This is, every day we get up, we participate in making these bankers a little bit richer because they own the system completely top to bottom, soup to nuts. When I'm, and the World War III, that's where they will lead us in order to achieve their kind of a global domination to get this global financial, governance in place. Anybody that stands up to him is going to die, or at least it's going to be a fight.
You know, no, we've got another who wants to make a comment here as we're joining people around. This is Ravana. He is a host on These Changing Times Radio, and he wanted to comment to both of you gentlemen, and thank you very much for being with us today on United We Strike.
Hello. Thanks for having me on. I just wanted to say thanks for having me. Great to be on the show with you guys for a little bit. Gold and silver. I mean, that's really where it's at. We need to get back to gold and silver or doing barter. I mean, like you said, it's all the fiat currency, the debt notes, the Federal Reserve notes. You know, they're not money. Go and try and pay your IRS bill with Federal Reserve notes. They won't accept them. So if they won't accept you paying your taxes, how are they taxing you on something based on those notes that they won't accept you to pay your taxes with? I mean, they want your signature.
Well, hold on a second. You said something there that you said you can't pay back the IRS debt with Federal Reserve notes.
Yeah, I don't agree with that either.
I've heard of a couple people that have tried to go in with paper money and pay it, and they won't accept it. Now, I heard about a guy who went in and paid his, like, you know, $3,000 in pennies, and they had to accept that because it's constitutional currency. Coin is lawful tender, but the Federal Reserve note is a note of debt. And, you know, a lot of people just, they don't even pay attention to stuff like that. Just saying.
I think I have to be very honest. I think what you're dealing with is that most IRS offices are really not set up to transact in cash. And it was really a case of rather taking, you know, a check or some other transfer instrument from a bank account, than the idea that they won't accept a Federal Reserve note, because that makes no sense at all. The IRS is owned by the Federal Reserve, and there's no reason for the IRS to refuse those Federal Reserve notes.
They certainly want to propagate this system.
They absolutely do.
Maybe they also really want it to be a trackable, traceable transaction via a check or an electronic transfer, so that there's a record on it, and they don't have to count up the currency or hold heaps of currency
the risk of having some IRS agent walk out the door with all that cash, and then they still say you owe the tax, and you say I've paid it, because the IRS does have a huge problem with their own staff being less than honorable people.
Plus, if you do a transaction, you know, if you they want to have as much control completely over. If you go over $10,000, you're automatically going to get over $10,000 in cash. You're automatically
not everybody, Charlie. If you have a company listed on the New York Stock Exchange, you don't have to fill out transaction receipts if you do deposits over $10,000. That's why Wall Street is greatly used. I think Pepsi and Coke or whatever launder drug money for Colombian drug gangs and stuff like that through the CIA.
I think you get around that. Sure. Ravana, thanks for the comments and thanks for being here. One thing I want to jump onto real quick, though, and get your guys' opinion on this. Gold standard, silver standard, you know, you see a lot of the central banks now talking more and more about precious metals backing some form of new, whatever, maybe the new SDR, whatever the new global currency is going to be pitched to us is going to be backed by gold.
Well, I think it's a bad idea. I think it's a bad idea.
Let me finish my point, Mike. I don't care what we're calling our currency. I don't care if it's pebbles. I don't care if it's wampum. I don't care if it's
bam bam or tally
sticks. If the people determine the value of it and issue it, right, as our Constitution prescribes, Article 1, Section 8, then I'm for it. If it's gold-backed currency that central banks control the value of it, I don't want anything to do with it because I'll just do the exact same thing that we have right now. That was my spiel.
Well, this is how that's how fiat currency started in the first place. People taking your gold and then giving out more gold receipts than they had gold in reserve. I mean, what's the gold standard going to prevent again?
Well, here's the thing. I think you're confusing the idea of a fiat currency with leveraging, which is when you take in so much gold and you hand out more paper certificates than you have gold to cover. That's fractional reserve banking or leveraging. Fiat currency is one that has no backing at all, where the government simply declares by fiat, this is the money and this is what it's worth. But I absolutely agree we need to have, or we need to return to a government-issued, value-backed currency. But I disagree with the idea of going back to a gold standard because right now the same people who looted our nation with Federal Reserve notes are now buying up all the gold. A lot of people who think they still have gold are going to be surprised to find out they've got these tungsten cord fakes. And to be a good value base for a currency, it has to be a commodity that everybody agrees has value but must exist or be creatable in ample enough supply to grow with the population so you don't get into these situations of hoarding and manipulation, which is what we see with gold and silver. And you could walk into any country with a gallon of gasoline, and somebody would want to trade for that. When the German government coming out of the Weimar Republic, when they got rid of their private central bank that had been imposed on them by the Treaty of Versailles at the end of World War I, they denominated their new currency as a unit of human labor, and it worked. Germany's economy turned around dramatically. They called it the German miracle, and of course all the rest of the banking cartels in the world tried to boycott Germany to crush it out of existence, because in the end, a nation that is enslaved to a private central bank and a debt-based currency cannot possibly compete with a nation that has a value-based currency that is under the control of the government and the people. And so that basically was the beginning of the path to war against Nazi Germany. And the same situation applies here. If we simply say we're going to get rid of Federal Reserve notes and go to a gold standard, we're going to find ourselves being under the control and owned by those who are even now buying up all the gold that they can. So that's not a good idea. Now, over at my website, we posted an idea of a new currency called the Electro, which was denominated as a kilowatt hour of electricity. And the idea being that, yes, it would be monetized in terms of, you know, currency and note and everything, but anybody with a solar cell is literally creating money and wealth on their own property. You can't monopolize electricity. If electricity literally is the money, you're going to see this incredible explosion of efficiency and power transmission and storage and generation. So there's a lot of positive aspects to that. But the idea is, whatever unit of value we base the new currency on, it has to be something that exists in ample enough supply where these manipulation and hoarding games cannot possibly work.
Yeah. Well, I always thought about backing a currency with scumbaggery. So the bigger a scumbag you were, the more wealth you had. And apparently that system's already working.
Yeah, they have that in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, the planet has that.
The scumbaggero.
Yeah, that's right. The scumbaggero. I like it. I'm on your website right now because I want to read this. I like that. I like the sounds of that, Mike. And you're right. I mean, if we have this currency that's based in this scarce material that only the elite have, then we don't have anything different than we have right now. We have to have it that the average person can get it. Look, Rome wasn't built on gold currency. Rome was built on copper currency. Rome was built on the money that the people could get into their hands. And it wasn't so rare that, you know, everybody was shut out on it. This is the game of the banking cabal, and has been since, you know, for 5,000 years. They need to get control of the currencies. They can control the issuance. They can inflate. They can deflate. They can crash. They can create bubbles and pop them at their will. And when they're done, they sit there and scoop in and take everything. And it's just an archaic system, and it's the most inhumane system that we could possibly have in place is the one we have now. We have, you know, all this wealth in certain pockets of the world and just utter famine in other parts of the world, all because of our the global financial system.
Could I just say two things? I mean, essentially, you look at the problem that we've got here, and the problem is really just interest on nothing. Okay, it's interest on Federal Reserve currency, which is nothing. It's paper. Okay, and then the other problem is you've got all this existing debt, which was created out of nothing. So I think the real problem is you just get rid of interest on currency, just straight up, make it illegal. And secondly, you cancel all and forgive all existing debt, and you start it away. You know, I always thought it was kind of funny, you know, you make up all this debt. just out of thin air. And so why don't we just pretend that it's not there? You know, it's the same mentality, except this way we're not all completely enslaved by a bunch of ruthless criminal sociopathic scumbaggery fruitcakes.
Well, you need to understand that banking isn't science. It's operating as a religion, and it relies on the belief of people that this is the way life is supposed to be, that these arbitrary rules that enrich the bankers are something real and tangible that we must obey. And again, because politicians tend to be the sort of people who will gladly sell out their constituents for a fast buck, anybody who's got whatever the money supply is deemed to be is in a position to warp the government to their own ends. And those politicians who stand up against them get shot at, as we pointed out earlier.
Well, in Andrew Jackson's case, it was multiple times. Didn't some guy, some assassin try and come up with him with two pistols and both of them misfired?
Both of them failed. Both of them failed.
Yeah. Guys, I'm getting a message from Karen that we got to wrap it because they got Dr. Dean Boyd and Ann Rosen coming up next in the last program. So I'll end it up. Mike Rivero, what really happened? .com, Vinny Eastwood, the Vinny Eastwood Program.com. Is that the correct website for you, Vinny?
The Vinny Eastwood Show. Just search Vinny Eastwood, Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question. Eastwood doesn't go ahead. Make my news.
And Ravana, give us your info. I think he jumped off.
Beyond the Looking Glass.
Say it again.
No, I'm here. Beyond the Looking Glass on changingtimesradio.ning.com, and that's times with a Z or a Z, depending on where you are. And the show will be Thursday, 8 p.m. Central, 6 p.m. Pacific. Thanks for having me.
All right, Mike, Vinny, Ravana, I'm Charlie McGrath, wideawakenews.com. Enjoy the rest of the marathon weekend, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, man.
You're listening to the International Community Radio Network.